This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
All right, and welcome back to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap with your hosts, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, again, thanks for the call out. We got to dive into some immediate superhero movie news as we might not have a Superman currently.
Yeah, we might not have a Superman, and with all the news and all the craziness that is the Justice League universe, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw it broke that Henry Cavill is reportedly out as Superman, and then on his Instagram page, he posted a really cryptic and bizarre video of him with the Superman action figure. Not really sure what to read into that, but I mean, all signs are pointing to him, you know, being out in the franchise. You know, Ben Affleck is out. I think they're just doing some major, you know, revamping. What are your thoughts on this, Mark?
Yeah, John. I mean, the word that comes to my mind immediately is just bizarre. You know, no one really knows exactly what is and what isn't happening. The first reports, I think, came out of Screen Rant that he was out. It was a done deal. Then I think Warner Brothers came out a couple of hours later to said, you know, we're just in contract negotiations. Nothing has immediately happened at this point in time. But there really has been no news one way or the other as to, you know, whether he's out for good or not. And then he mentioned the bizarre Instagram video. And I guess what we have to look into is, you know, it's an old saying, if there's smoke, there's fire. I'm going to take that as if there's all the smoke going on, chances are they're looking to make some revamp, or maybe he's just lost interest in the franchise. Regardless, if I was a betting man, I probably say at this point that we're going to get a new Superman whenever Man of Steel 2 comes out or whatever it's going to be called.
Yeah, and on top of that, he just recently signed on to The Witcher for Netflix, which, you know, it's probably going to be an 8 or 10 episode show based on the popular, I think it was graphic novels and a video game series. So yeah. I've got to imagine that's what he's going to be investing his time in. So, you know, I'm not even sure when he would find the time to do another Justice League or a new Superman movie at this point. And I mean, honestly, I feel like it's probably a good move on his part just to distance himself from the franchise. It's been, you know, misstep after misstep outside of pretty much Wonder Woman. So, you know, I don't think it's a huge loss on his part. And I guess the studio looks at it the same way that, you know, he's, you know, they don't look at him as a crucial part of the franchise for Justice League. So they're, you know, evidently okay with him, you know, walking out on things. And, I mean, it obviously raises the question then is who's going to be Superman moving forward. So who'd you like to see there, Mark?
You know, this was kind of puzzling for me to think about, just because on one hand, it's like it's Superman. You would think that they kind of need someone who has a lot of big name clout. But on the other hand, I'm feeling if they really believe that this character, by all intents and purposes, I would imagine he's going to be around for a long, long time and in Hollywood moving forward, I would think that maybe they might want to lean towards casting someone kind of young, like how Spider-Man did and Marvel did with Tom Holland. I mean, he can do this for a very, very long time. I believe last time I checked, he's like 21. So he can be cranking out these for a very, very long time with tons of different story elements. So leading up to that, I've kind of focused on two names I believe that could be maybe potential fits. I'm going to throw this one out and I'm going to see what your thoughts are. I came up with Ansel Elgort of Baby Driver fame. I mean, can you see that?
To be honest, it's hard to picture when you first say it, but I couldn't picture Heath Ledger as the Joker. So, you know, joke's on me. I mean, he's young. I think, you know, he's definitely, he's got like the, you know, natural good looking Superman flair to him. He'd probably have to start doing a lot of push-ups and crunches. But I could see that. I think he's pretty well liked by the audience, and he's, you know, he's got some nice, movies to his name. He's got, you know, obviously Baby Driver. And then I forget what the one was, but, it was based on a novel, and it was kind of like a, you know, teen like dramedy type flick. But point being, I think he captures the audience of, you know, younger females too, which is, you know, automatically going to kind of bolster his popularity and maybe bring some new, you know, audience to Superman. So I don't think that's a bad one at all.
Yeah, I mean, I figure it's, you know, maybe he's not the first name that comes to people's minds, but if you're just kind of thinking this from like a logical standpoint and maybe not, you know, just a big name standpoint, I think the studio would want to lean towards someone who kind of is around that, let's say 21 to 29, 30 age range, where they can maybe go with them moving forward for like 3 to 4 to 5 films instead of someone who, you know, maybe might be super established, but if they're already 45, 50, you know, chances are they might not have a lot of time left to really want to do those movies and all the commitments that they take. So that's just my, you know, gut feeling, you know, moving forward, that I would think that they would lean towards someone who kind of has that, that younger age to build them up.
Yeah, for sure. And The Fault in Our Stars is the movie that, yes, I can think of.
Yeah.
But to your point, and sorry, I'll move on to the next topic in after this, but yeah, like you said, you know, cast a younger star that can carry a franchise. What drives me nuts is with James Bond, they're looking at guys who are in their late 40s who are going to be looking old by their second movie. So I like the idea of getting somebody, you know, like a fresh pick that you're going to actually give some time to carry the franchise. So I think it's a good one. All right, that was one. Who was the other one that you had?
I had the secondary star, if you will, from Magic Mike, Alex Pettifer. You know, he's kind of a name that's, I would say, made his name on Magic Mike, but he hasn't really had a whole bunch of success within Hollywood. He did a movie, I think it was last year, very, very small release called The Strange Ones, where it wasn't the best of movies, but it was kind of a creepy mystery thriller where he's this enigmatic brother who kind of has to take care of his younger brother, and there's just a lot of stuff that ends up being revealed at the end of the movie. So I actually think, you know, after seeing that movie, he kind of has a presence. He has the chops around him. He definitely kind of already comes in, I'd say, pre-built with the frame. He wouldn't need to undergo a rigorous a training process, but I think he's a person that, you know, maybe you could potentially watch out for. I could visualize him donning the, you know, the big S and the red cape. So those are just two guys I came up with, but I'm sure there are a couple that could be on a short list or two.
Yeah. I just taking a glance at him. I think he's definitely got the look more so than Elgert, but man, I just, his movies, the few that I've seen between like Magic Mike and I Am Number 4, I didn't love him in those, sure, by any stretch, but yeah, he's, you know, he's young, so maybe his best is yet to come.
Right.
And then just the one that you had mentioned to me before we kicked things off here was, I guess, Michael B. Jordan's name was thrown out there.
Yeah, it was.
That one I love. I think he could be a great fit. He's obviously shredded from the Creed movies, yep, so it's not like he'd have to, you know, start to undergo some rigorous training program. And on top of that, I think it would just continue the train that we've seen with Black Panther, Crazy Rich Asians. You know, people are ready for, you know, new unique movies, and I think casting Michael B. Jordan is just going to bring a whole new level of interest to Superman that wasn't there previously.
I'm interested in it if they went that route. You know, he's got his fan base, and I think the guy has proven over years to be a very solid and spectacular, charismatic actor. So I wouldn't mind if went that route. I guess on my end, though, I would prefer them to go in another route, only because maybe I'm a little selfish, but I think Michael B already kind of has his quote unquote superhero franchise with Creed. I could see him doing that for a couple years and, you know, that kind of really being his thing while he continues to do, you know, some other dramatic projects, whether it be with Ryan Coogler or some other talented director. So I have no doubts that he couldn't pull it off, and it would definitely maybe bring a jolt into the DC extended universe. But personally, I guess I just don't really care enough to see it, only because he's done a couple superhero franchises already. And I think that, you know, at his stage in his career, he's still a young guy, kind of talk like he's old, but I feel like at this stage of his career, you know, he can continue doing the Creed movies for a couple more movies, and he can still do like some dramatic stuff too, that maybe could, you know, get him in the Oscar conversation, you know, moving forward next couple of years. So that's That's my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess, you know, if you look at his history of superhero movies, he does have the Fantastic Four reboot on there, which just blew up in everybody's face. So
right.
Maybe he's trying to stay a little clear of that, diving into another superhero franchise for the time being.
Yeah.
All right. Other news we've got, and we'll try to blow through this rather quick here, but we've got Disney's Jungle Cruise just wrapped filming. It's going to star Emily Blunt and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I love the casting there. I'm a big fan of Blunt, big fan of The Rock. I don't really know too much about Jungle Cruise, similar to, I didn't know that much about, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean. They're Disney rides that they're making into, you know, mainstream movies. And Pirates of the Caribbean, at least before they just, you know, went down the franchise rabbit hole, I thought the first movie was great. It got an Oscar nomination for Johnny Depp. So fingers crossed they can kind of recapture that magic. But I guess I'm definitely a little hesitant about how this movie's going to look when it's released. So did you have any thoughts on that one?
Not a whole bunch at this point in time. I did see some of the, production pics. So, I mean, it does look like it's going to have a pretty solid budget behind it. I mean, if it's, being fronted by, Disney, I mean, obviously the budget's going to be there and the cast is going to be there charisma wise with, The Rock and Blunt. And even some of the, smaller guys like Paul Giamatti and Jesse Plemons, they often bring a lot of gravitas to, any work that they do. So the cast is going to be there. The director, Jaume Collet-Serra, he's really known for doing a lot of the Liam Neeson thrillers. So like Nonstops and Run All Nights. He did The Commuter, this year, which wasn't great. But, he's got a name with action. This seems like it's going to be more of an adventure movie. I'm not the biggest fan of trailers, but this would be one where I'd probably have a lot of interest in just to get a vibe for what type of direction is going to be taking it.
Yeah, definite curiosity about what they're going to do with this one. Is it going to be like a Jumanji where they're like sucked into an alternate universe type deal? And maybe they try to just, keep Dwayne Johnson in that kind of role since, Jumanji blew up and was a huge success. But I saw a few Instagram posts that Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson threw out there, and it looks like they have great chemistry together. So I think at the very least that'll be, noticeable in the film.
Sure, I agree.
Sticking with The Rock, we've got Hobbs and Shaw, which started filming with Jason Statham this week. It looked like he was on set with, do you know offhand who's directing that one?
Hobbs and Shaw?
Yeah.
It's David Leitch from Deadpool 2.
Yes,
co-director of John Wick. Yep.
Yeah, okay. So it looked like him and Statham are on set, and Dwayne Johnson's going to be joining them in a couple weeks. But this is the first really spinoff of the Fast and Furious franchise. I think they realized that in the last couple movies, especially 8, kind of the biggest appeal to that was the relationship between Hobbs and Shaw, Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham, and they had the awesome prison fight scene where they're both breaking out, and here we are with those two and their own spinoff, and I think it's the right move. I didn't love the most recent Fast and Furious movie. It's becoming way too much for me. So I think focusing on this, kind of subplot of it and hopefully just trying to tone things down from the ridiculousness of the franchise. I think if they capture that, they can make a great movie here. So what are you thinking?
I'm feeling the same way. Kind of just reading a little bit into the movie. It definitely sounds like they're intending on going with an 80s vibe, into it, which I think kind of works for their characters and maybe refreshing the FNF universe. So I am interested, mm-hmm. and I'm with you. I wasn't in love with 8. I think losing Paul Walker kind of did lose a lot with that franchise as far as, as far as not just story-wise goes, but having another, more or less a realistic person in a kind of unrealistic world. So I think that kind of brought down the movie a lot with no Paul Walker. But yeah, coming out of 8, I was all in on a Hobbs and Shaw team up. And I got to say, I've got a lot more anticipation for their spinoff than Fast and Furious 9, which I think is going to come, I presume, at some point in 2020. So my excitement levels are a lot more higher with the spinoff than they are with Fast and Furious 9.
Yep, totally agree. And if they make it kind of like a darker, grittier movie, I think that'd be awesome. So really excited to see which direction they take that in. Last bit of news here is Venom, the official rating came out. It's going to be rated PG-13. Personally, I'm not a fan of that. And I don't think that a movie needs to have violence or language to, be good by any stretch, which we've mainly seen with superhero movies. Outside of Deadpool and Logan, they're not really rated R. But I think just the general feel that I've had from the trailers, it's got me losing interest. I don't love the look of Venom, and I was really hoping like maybe they'll just rate it R and it'll be a real dark version with a little bit of comedy mixed in as well. But I don't know. Personally, the PG-13 rating just puts me off even more on this one.
Yeah, it is kind of unfortunate, isn't it? Looking at the trailers too, I kind of got the same vibe, especially on that money shot at the end. I forget if it's the first one or second one where Venom opened up his mouth and looks like he's about to, devour some poor sucker. But
Yeah, right.
I did also believe that they were gonna shoot for an R, but I can understand why they're pulling towards and going back to a PG-13. I guess ultimately they don't know what the relationship's going to be moving forward with Spider-Man and Venom. And I think they want to have that ace up their cards where, if Venom is eventually going to be in this larger MCU, then I think it'd be a lot of difficulty in toning down R-rated Venom and putting him in like a predominantly PG-13 environment. So my gut is kind of the
Yeah.
same. I'm disappointed that this is not going to be R. I'm not one of those suckers or one of those guys who says, this has to be a hardcore R, but I do think some source material, especially when it comes to comics, lends itself a lot more efficiently towards being an R. So I'm with you on being disappointed, but I can see why they kind of just want to play it safe and keep it at that PG-13.
Yeah, that's a good point. If their end game is to get Spider-Man in the mix, then you can't really rate it R, or else going from R to PG-13 for that, combination movie is that would really upset fans even more, I think. Also, Tom Holland's 21, you said earlier. I thought he was like 13.
He's gonna have one of those faces where he will just never age. But yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
it's surprising how young he is. And yeah, I mean, you could put him in probably eighth grade and no one would bat an eye.
Yeah, I had no idea. My God. Okay, well let's shift to the box office top five from the previous week.
It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
Still hanging into the top five, we've got Crazy Rich Asians, which brought in another 8.7 million, continuing its successful reign at the box office. Number four, I'll let you run with this one since you saw it, but we've got White Boy Rick with 8.8 million.
Yeah, with number four, it's White Boy Rick. I was able to catch this movie on Sunday. Got my thoughts up on thatmomentin.com right now, along with my website, moviemanjackson.com. But we talked a little bit about it last week, and I had a little bit of excitement for it, more or less. After checking out the movie, I would kind of compare it to sort of like a middle ground between, I don't know if you saw last year's American Made with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Plus kind of like Black Mass, that 2015 biopic of Whitey Bulger by Johnny Depp. And I kind of bring those two movies up because White Boy Rick, I don't want to say it struggles with tone, but in the first half it kind of has this it doesn't know exactly kind of what way it wants to go. It really kind of focuses on the glitz and glamour of Rick Jr.'s come up from getting into the dope game. But then afterwards, it doesn't really know when to be serious and when to kind of just revel in all the funness that his rise comes up at. And now the second half does get a little better. They really kind of find an emotional core and like a viewpoint to latch onto. Ultimately, though, I think it works better as like a father son and daughter movie than a biopic or some statement on the criminal justice system, because they really never commit to it enough, unfortunately. And
No problem.
lastly, really, I would say people just to give it a watch just because of the stars. This is definitely Matthew McConaughey's best role since his Oscar-winning role in Dallas Buyers Club. He was
Wow.
really, really good in Interstellar, but and I like that movie Interstellar, but it does have a couple of problems. With this one, though, he's very, very charismatic and just, you know, has a level of magnetism from the get-go. But the star himself, Richie Merritt, he's really, really good also. This is his first time he's ever really performed in any type of movie. So he's got that going for him, and he doesn't really back down at all from Matthew McConaughey. Their daughter is also really well. She's a great actor also. I feel like I'm kind of rambling on here, but the three core performances are something to witness. So kind of disappointed with the movie as a whole, but I would still recommend just because I was so engrossed with the father-son-daughter type story. Mm.
Yeah, and that's what I caught from the trailer is I didn't really get sucked into that much interest, you know, in Rick's story, but just seeing how ridiculous Matthew McConaughey looked, I was like, oh man, I really hope he gets a supporting actor nod because it looks like a role that he really immersed himself into. So awesome to hear that that was the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think that my gut is that his best supporting actor nom is probably not going to happen. We still have a couple more months until, you know, January and February, but I'd love to kind of do some type of research one day. I'd love to see, you know, what if there's any correlation between, you know, a best supporting actor nominated film and kind of what the marks are for that performance on Rotten Tomatoes, because my gut is the Rotten Tomatoes score is kind of low right now. I can't see him getting a nomination for it, but he's deserving of it. I would say he's deserving of it for sure.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll monitor that over the next couple months, and hopefully it garnishes some excitement around Oscar season. Number three spot, A Simple Favor with $16 million. Mark and I did not make it to this one, unfortunately, but yeah. I think you said you're going to get a review out hopefully this week.
That's the goal, John. That's the goal. There's always stuff that's kind of going on in my world and your world too. But, you know, out of the three main movies, we're going to get to The Predator at the end. Trust me, we'll definitely get to that. But, yeah, out of the three movies that did come out this week, it seems to be the most well-received across the board. That's not to say that, you know, it's an amazing movie, but it does seem to capture this neo-noir kind of trashy 80s, 90s style, you know, thriller. I guess think like Wild Things and movies like that. So I am interested. I am interested. You've got Anna Kendrick and you've got not Taylor Swift, but
Blake Lively.
Ooh, oh my gosh. Just go ahead and just cut me off right now. But
got Taylor on your mind.
I've got her on my mind some way, shape, or form. But no, everything I've heard is you know, it's pretty compelling fun. It's not amazing, but you know, there's a couple of good twists and turns. So I am interested in catching it at some point.
Yeah, I think it's got, I believe Paul Feig was the director, right?
Yeah, he's the director of Bridesmaids fame. He's done a lot with Melissa McCarthy, so I'm happy to see him kind of get away from that and, you know, maybe flex his muscle, so to speak, and other things. It still seems like some of the negatives I have heard is the tone can be a little bit weird in some spots, and if you're not, you know, high on black comedy, it might not be for you. That makes me sound good, or that makes me feel good, because I kind of do like my comedy to be a little dry and a little dark and a little warped.
Oh,
so,
for sure.
You know, I think I might take to it, but I'm hoping to get to it at some point this week, or if not, next weekend.
Yeah, I'm a huge dark comedy fan. If you've ever seen In Bruges, it's probably, I mean, it's one of my favorite movies, and I think it does, you know, dark comedy as good or better than any other movie I've seen.
I've still missed In Bruges, but I did see another one of that director's following movie, Seven Psychopaths, and I know that Colin Farrell was in that one too, and I love that one, so I feel like, you know, going to In Bruges, I'd probably appreciate that a ton, so I've got to get to that at some point.
Yeah, Martin McDonagh, amazing writer, phenomenal director. In Bruges, I think, was nominated for screenplay. He obviously just brought Three Billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri, which was an amazing movie. So there's your homework. Watch In Bruges. You won't regret it.
Hey, maybe I can go ahead and watch it over this little minute break that we've got to take for ad space.
Yep, sounds good.
We'll return after these announcements.
Hi, I'm Nick from the Nick and Vince Podcast. I want to let you know about a new podcast I'm launching next month. It's called the St. Paul Filmcast, where each week, me and my co-host Dan will pick one classical film to review. We'll also be discussing new films, modern films, new releases, and other aspects film-related. You'll find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can already find our podcast on Twitter at St. Paul Filmcast and Instagram. I hope you give us a listen. Thank you very much.
Rising from the depths of a state called Michigan, two inebriated dorks prepare their plan for intergalactic domination, mixing their extensive knowledge of geek culture with their insatiable thirst for alcohol. These two man-children bring you a show like you've never heard before. They will tell you tales from faraway lands and have you questioning their taste in beer. But make no mistake, friend, for the best coverage of your favorite comics, films, and TV shows, there's no better source for you to get your fix. So listen up, strap in, and prepare yourself as Jake and Tom conquer the world.
All right, and we're back. We've made it through the bottom three of the top five of this past week at the box office, and we'll move on to the number two spot, which is The Nun, which brought in another $18.2 million. You know, the expected drop-off for its second week, you know, brought in over $50 million to begin with, but, you know, still continuing to bring in money. I don't think you got a chance to check this one out, did you, Mark?
I didn't, and if I'm being honest, I'm probably going to have this one on the back burner compared to other things that I feel like are more urgent at this point in time, sadly. But, you know, I think we hit on it pretty hard last week where, you know, it wasn't anything impressive. It sounded like, honestly, it was kind of disappointing, but the legs are going to be there. A lot of things, a lot of horror movies are front-loaded the first weekend. This one, you can kind of tell it dropped by about a little over 65%. So the legs might not be there for a long, long time, but it's definitely going to clear $100 million. I presume that it'll still probably have a pretty good week next week. And then once we get to October, you know, it'll probably taper down pretty fast, but, yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah. Not missing anything there. I wouldn't waste the time. It's, got my review on thatmomentin.com. So if you're interested, check it out. But, yeah, missed the mark for myself. And last but not least, one that Mark and I both checked out. You can check my review for it online, and in which I, you know, kind of toured a new one for The Predator with $24 million. Mark, my feedback was pretty clear in my review. What'd you think of it?
We're, you know, this is just an agreement pod, you know, today, and I after reading your stuff, I was able to kind of catch it on Saturday, and ultimately I felt the same way. You know, really the news coming out of this one was that that cut scene that we talked about last week, where we just didn't understand what was Shane Black thinking by, you know, hiring one of his good friends and, you know,
right,
sexual assault abusers, whatever you want to call it, you know, and putting in a scene where it's just super uncomfortable. So obviously they did the right thing by removing that. My main shocker after watching it is there's so many scenes of just that type of tone throughout the entire movie. You know, there's that first one where we're probably getting a little bit in spoiler territory, but we'll try to make it pretty general, where, you know, everyone kind of reconvenes at a hotel and it's just Olivia Munn sleeping on the bed. And you've got,
oh my God,
these,
yes,
you've got all these crazy characters, you know, they're the, they're the cuckoos who, you know, have gotten evaluated for various types of, you know, mental, you know, faculties and all that jazz. And, you know, they're just firing quip after quip. And, you know, Shane Black clearly thinks this is funny, but he's going on. And ultimately I'm like rolling my eyes because it's just, A, it was not funny. And B, it just made me super uncomfortable to be in that scene. And that was just one scene.
Yeah.
If we go back even before that, you know, when we first kind of get introduced to Munn's character, she's, you know, being taken across the facility. And there's kind of this, you know, older white scientist. And you can tell he's interested in her. And it's just like a very creepy vibe throughout the entire movie with him on. And it's just, I don't I don't get how he just let all these, you know, pieces in and thought that they would be funny.
He was, I thought the movie was unbelievably tone deaf. That room in the hotel, or the, I'm sorry, the scene in the hotel room where, you know, Thomas Jane, whose character has Tourette's, which was a really bizarre addition, in my opinion. But the stuff that he's saying to Olivia Munn when they're going back and forth, I was like, what was Shane Black thinking? It baffled me. I said this in my review. I thought he was like pandering to a teenage boy audience who's going to laugh at, you know, these kinds of jokes. And I was shocked because I love The Nice Guys. I thought it was a really funny, well-written, put-together movie. And the fact that the same writer-director made this was just, you know, baffling to me.
Yeah, and you kind of got into the into your review about kind of like them going for an 80s tone. And I mean, 80s movies have, you know, humor. They kind of lean towards one-liners. And, you know, occasionally The Predator does kind of reference, you know, the 1987 Materion original. And I think it has like one or two callbacks to the sequel with Danny Glover. I can't remember off the top of my head, but there are some occasional cool callbacks that they do make. But they just seem so focused and so tunnel visioned on, you know, making this like a comedy. And I didn't get it, you know, because we're not coming to see The Predator necessarily for a comedy. You know, we kind of want to see it for an action movie. And, you know, outside of one to two scenes, it was kind of boring on an action level. And even just looking at the CGI, it was kind of underwhelming for, I presume, you know, the solid budget that they had. Really just a disappointment across the board.
Yeah, the action that was there, I thought it was just, you know, pretty average. It's nothing we haven't seen before. I don't think they really tried to push the limits of bringing us anything new and exciting. I remember my initial concern going into it was that the setting and the backdrop of the movie was eerily similar to Alien vs. Predator 2. Yep. And that's exactly what it felt like to me. So I don't know. I really just didn't like really anything about the movie. I enjoyed Sterling K. Brown's character. I thought he was kind of funny in his, like, you know, slimy scumbag government agent type role. But even by the end, Black's writing was kind of turning me off on him.
Yeah, I'm with you on there. I think Sterling K. Brown, he was a definite high point in the movie. I'd say just on, you know, pure laughs, he really had most of them. And I like Trevante Rhodes too. He was pretty good as kind of the leader of this ragtag, you know, crazy crew. I kind of would have loved to maybe see his type of character be in the Boy Holbrook role. I found Boy Holbrook to be kind of dry and kind of boring with this, with this army background, sniper, you know, background. There wasn't a whole bunch to him. I would love to kind of see a movie where Trevante Rhodes, his character was kind of like the leader. He had to, you know, go across the Predator. You would have needed to tweak some things in the writing, but I think it could have made for a slightly more memorable movie and definitely a more memorable character. And Munn herself, she's not bad either, but I felt like her character, she was all over the place. You know, she came in as a scientist, and, you know, 10 minutes later, you know, some stuff's happening at the facility and she just picks up a gun. And it's like she had prior training with this because there's no hesitation. Right. You know, she eventually snaps the neck of some extraterrestrial being. And it just, I didn't know kind of where she came from either, because there was nothing that indicated that she had, you know, this type of training. I mean, for all intents and purposes, she was just a scientist.
Right. I mean, and Black, he could have addressed that by putting in one sentence for Munn, being like, oh, you know, by the way, I did like, you know, a week of military training back in the day or something. It'd be really easy to just avoid any confusion on why she's, you know, suddenly a badass. But, you know, he just rolled with it, I guess, like everything else in the movie.
Yeah, I know we kind of talked about this a lot. But yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. You know, The Predator 1987 was one of the better action movies, and not just that decade, but I think it's done a lot for a lot of different action movies. And I'm a guy who even likes the second Predator. I don't think it's amazing, but I definitely think it gets a lot more hate than, you know, the 29% on Rotten Tomatoes I think it deserves. So I think even that movie is pretty good. I haven't really kept up a whole bunch with some of the, you know, AVPs and the 2010 or 2011 Predator with Adrian Brody. So I'm kind of out of loop there, but, you know, I just don't see where this can go after the colossal failure of this one. It came in number one, obviously, but you know, for how they set things up, I just don't see enough people wanting to go back into this Predator universe.
I hated the ending, man. I thought it was so lame what they did too. I hopefully they don't make a sequel to it and they just, you know, reboot and restart. But I agree. Rhodes should have been the lead. He was, you know, a way cooler character who actually had that similar vibe to like the 1987, you know, jacked Marines.
Yeah.
It's a shame, but it is what it is. So, on to this week's movie releases.
Coming soon to theaters.
We've got The House with a Clock in Its Walls, Life Itself, Assassination Nation, which we're going to let, I think Vern's probably going to run with the review on that one, and The Sisters Brothers. So anything of particular interest here, Mark?
I'm going to try to get to The House with a Clock on Its Walls. I might have a screening come up on Tuesday, so I'm hoping I can get to that and hopefully get some thoughts up. I know a couple weeks back we had talked about the movie, you know, being directed by Eli Roth and how he's kind of the gorehound guy who really has done a lot with those type of movies, and his stuff always has kind of a weird, you know, dark tone. So I'm interested enough because he's, to my knowledge, never done like a PG movie or a quote unquote family movie.
Right.
This is still probably going to be dark in some spots compared to other family movies, but it does carry a PG rating. I've never read the book I think it's based on, but I'm interested enough to probably give it a run for my screening on Tuesday, and we'll see how it goes. My take is, you know, it's starring Jack Black, and I know a couple years ago he did the Goosebumps movie. I've seen the trailer a couple times where it's not exactly like that, but it kind of maybe has some similarities, so I'm wondering if it's kind of going to be in that vein or not.
Yeah, it definitely seems like kind of a clash between Goosebumps and a 1980s movie called, I think just called The House. But it's essentially, you know, all this like crazy, you know, mysterious, like mystery realm is taking place within this house. And it's kind of like a horror comedy.
Okay.
So I think it's, you know, going to be it was an okay movie. It was kind of ridiculous, but that's the kind of the vibe that I'm getting is a mix between those two. And my guess is this is probably going to open at number one, but also probably not make a ton of money just because I don't think it's been marketed too heavily. So I'm thinking somewhere in like the $25 million realm. What are you thinking on how the box office is going to break down?
I would highly put my bets on it showing up as number one. You know, the Predator has had its time of the sun, however, you know, shallow that might be. But I would maybe say something along the lines of I could see it finishing 18 to 23 million. Not going to be a week where the box office sets anything on fire, but just on the fact that you can possibly take you know, your family to it and, you know, see something a little different should be enough to get it to number one.
Yeah, then we've got Life Itself, which it's helmed by Dan Fogelman, who did This Is Us, and I believe he did Crazy Stupid Love. And he brought together quite the ensemble cast. We've got Oscar Isaac, Olivia Wilde, Mandy Patinkin, Annette Bening, Antonio Banderas. So I think it's all going to be, you know, just a movie pieced together of, you know, different times throughout, you know, the lives of the characters that are mixed into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Initially, I think the trailer looks good. You know, I think it's probably going to be a pretty deep and emotional movie. And I like Fogelman's work, at least on Crazy Stupid Love. So I'm hoping it's a quality flick, but do you have any thoughts on this one?
I have not gotten to see a trailer, actually. So if I do get the chance to check this out, I will probably be going in blind. Just the small pieces I have read, the thoughts aren't good. You know, the reviews aren't good.
No.
I think right now it's currently sitting around 21% on Rotten Tomatoes. It just seems like maybe it's a mess potentially with covering all the different types of generations that the movie does bring up. So, you know, if it's something I can get to, I'm going to set my stuff pretty low. I know it came out at the Toronto International Film Festival a couple weeks ago. But yeah, the early takes, the other reviews, whatever word you want to use, They're not painting it as something that is emotionally resounding. So I'll just leave you with that.
Oh, wow. Forget everything I just said. It's got, oh my gosh, 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, like a 1.5 out of 4 on RogerEbert.com. All right. Don't go see Life Itself.
I love Oscar Isaac. I think he's a guy where, you know, in the right movie, one of these days we're going to see him, you know, coming up, in the best supporting actor, best actor role, because he's got that charisma and he's got the talent. Obviously, this movie is not going to be it, but, you know, it's a shame because I like him.
Yeah, and one of the words that pops up in a review of it is convoluted. So apparently Fogelman might have had just too much going on with this one, which, yeah, you know, the trailer kind of gives you that concern. So, all right, last one is The Sisters Brothers. I know I'm excited about this. I think the cast is put together is awesome, with John C. Reilly, Jake Gyllenhaal, Joaquin Phoenix, who I think looks hilarious in it, and then Riz Ahmed. So I'm excited for it. I think it could be a great movie, another, you know, kind of dark comedy Western type. So I definitely want to check this one out if I can find it near me. Is this one that you're interested in?
Mark? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Anyone who knows anything about me, Jake Gyllenhaal is, you know, my favorite working actor today. I really think that the guy can pretty much do no wrong. I mean, I'm sure he's had, you know, a movie here and there last couple of years where, you know, it might not be up to snuff compared to his other filmography, but I feel like really since 2011, 2012, he's been operating on, you know, pretty high power levels, going back to Source Code, and we run through like End of Watch, Prisoners. I feel like he always makes a mark on any movie that he does do. So, you know, if you just say the name and he's in it, you know, chances are I'm going to watch it and I'm probably going to like it. And you mentioned the cast that is making up this movie, John C. Reilly, known mainly for comedy, but he definitely has a lot of dramatic, you know, skill in his hat. So I'm not concerned about him in the role. Joaquin Phoenix, you know, not a whole bunch needs to be said about him. A wealth of talent. And Riz Ahmed, you know, he's kind of like, I wouldn't say the unknown, because we've seen him enough now, but he's still, compared to the other guys, he doesn't have quite the body of work. But he was in Jake Gyllenhaal's movie in Nightcrawler, my favorite movie of 2014, and I'm still bummed that movie did not get any real Oscar love outside of screenwriting. But it should have.
Gyllenhaal was so creepy in that.
To not even get a Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor, you know, I'm bummed that I can name three or four categories where it should have got more love, but he was awesome in it. Riz Ahmed, though, plays off him very, very well. He was great in that movie, but he also, Ahmed, did The Night Of, a 10-episode miniseries on HBO, which was
really dark show.
Yeah, captivating, very captivating. He, has a lot of kind of understated charisma. So I'm interested in that cast alone. I don't know what the shakedown will be, but I imagine I will probably, at the very least, like it.
Yeah, same. I'm really excited for it. Just a matter of, you know, finding where it's going to be released at, since I think it is a pretty small, independent movie. So a lot of excitement for that one from the two of us. And with that, we will wrap things up here. We're predicting that The House with a Clock in Its Walls is going to be the biggest release of the upcoming week, despite the fact it'll probably not be huge by any stretch. Thanks again for joining, and you can catch us next week, and feel free to check out Mark, what reviews do we have coming this week from you?
Yeah, very good question. I'm pretty confident I'm going to get to The House with a Clock in Its Walls, so I would imagine I would probably have something up by Friday there, so that's definitely something I've got on my book. Hoping to get to A Simple Favor, so I just don't know if that will be also that coming weekend, or maybe it'll be like on the back end, but I would imagine I'm going to be able to have the opportunity to see it. So those two movies I would say to look forward to for myself.
All right. And I'm traveling this week, so I won't be releasing anything, but check out some of Mark's reviews on thatmomentin.com. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. You guys take care.